Greetings from the Southern Cohort of the 2019 UC Coro System-Wide Leadership Collaborative. Our cohort project is entitled Best Practices for Leading Campus-Wide Change Projects, and our deliverables include the production of podcast interviews with influential people in the area of change management theory and application. My name is Ken Walsh, Senior Assistant Dean and Chief of Staff in the Samueli School of Engineering at the University of California at Irvine. I'm joined in this interview by my cohort colleague, Mary Clark, Chief of Staff in the Office of the CFO and Vice Chancellor at UCI. Our guest in this podcast is Ron Cortez, the Chief Financial Officer and Vice Chancellor in the Division of Finance and Administration at UCI. Well, welcome, Ron. So maybe you can start by telling us how you developed as a change manager.
Well, my background in change management really began in the county of Santa Barbara.
Okay.
When I worked as a director of general services. And I really became interested in change management because of my passion really to be a good public servant. So I basically spent most of my career, all of my career, working for government, either my service in the military or local government and now higher ed. And I also believed that it's important for us to be providers of good customer service and that we also use taxpayer dollars as the most effectively and efficiently as possible. So that was really sort of my passion for wanting to be involved in change management and change management efforts. In Santa Barbara, I brought forth a number of different change management projects based on customer service. So I wanted the County of Santa Barbara to think of ourselves as a service provider. And one of the first things that I did when I was there is that I said, we have to earn people's business, right? We can't just rely on people to have to do business with us. And what does that mean? So I provided training to our staff, like how to be consultants. So like our architects had to go out and pitch their staff to the sheriff's department. And we became more of a group trying to earn people's business and to provide good satisfaction. And so then the county charged me with looking at a number of different departments, including the planning and development department and the housing and community economic development department. So as doing this, I became a little bit better at it, getting a chance to do it over and over again. I sort of then came upon this model, which is widely known and everyone has used it. It's been around such a long time, which is a balanced scorecard method by Kaplan. That's sort of the basis of the way I organize our unit here at UC Irvine, which it has the four layers, right? The first is learning and growth. That's the base. And then process improvement. And then financial. And on the top is customer service. And the reason that I really rely on this kind of model, both to assess an organization and to drive efforts of an organization, is because it's based upon people. And my belief is that the learning and growth section is the most important because that focuses on training your staff and a lot of the communications to the staff, and that's the foundation. And without that part, then you really can't rise up into the different areas. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit about how I became involved in it, and that I have a passion for making things better and using taxpayer dollars wisely. As you can see here at UC Irvine, we service a lot of first-generation students, and I want them to have the same experiences. Maybe people who go to other institutions have more resources, but if we can use ours more wisely and effectively, they can have that experience as well. Because we're in an environment where we have to just change. When I first arrived, somebody asked for like a light bulb, and I think that came back and it said, we will have a light bulb to you in 6 weeks. And I'm not sure, maybe it was you.
But it wasn't me.
All right. But
I can totally picture that happening.
Yeah, it happened on the same day, ironically, that I ordered a light bulb on Amazon as I went to work. Mm-hmm. And then when I came home at 5, it was on my doorstep. That's where the people in the university look at. They're like, hey, I'm on Amazon, I'm getting a light bulb, and I come to work, things take 6 weeks. Can't continue to operate that way. We have to, as an organization, continue to change to be relevant. And especially our organization really focuses on trying to help faculty. Mm-hmm. And faculty are being recruited here, coming from other institutions and used to having maybe more resources. that we have here and how are we sort of looking at how we can provide good service with what we have.
So you've talked about people being the driving force in change. What does the people side of change management mean to you?
People are definitely the key to any change management effort. And you have to imagine that people may be nervous about the change because they're not necessarily sure how it's going to impact them. And so I think that's an important part of communication. When I came to UC Irvine and I talked about the fact that we were going to be going through a lot of change, I then indicated to them that in my basically 20 years of doing the same particular type of position is that I hadn't laid anybody off due to process improvement efforts. That's an important part because I've always felt that if you have a process improvement effort and you're able to save positions, you lay people off, then when you work on your second process improvement effort, you're not going to have a lot of supporters. In the back of the mind, I'm always thinking, people are wondering, like, what's this change going to mean to my position? It's great we're bringing in new technology, it's going to make things 10 times faster, but can I operate that technology or can I use that technology and what's going to happen to me maybe? It's great if the organization is world-class, best class, but if I don't see myself in that picture, maybe that's not so good for me. So I think that's the partnership with people.
You talked about your experience as a change leader in a number of different settings. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how things are different in a higher education setting.
I think that the two perspectives that I can provide, when I worked for the county of Santa Barbara, I was the deputy CEO and we worked under a CEO model. Decisions were made faster, more authority in the CEO's office. And if you look at that framework compared to a UC's framework of shared governance, I sort of prefer the consultative model. Why? I sort of use this as an example. If we were given a project in the morning, we would develop a committee. By like noon, we figured out we forgot three people on the committee. We were correcting things after they were done. We moved very fast, but not always as thoughtfully as I think that we should have. Where in higher ed, it's definitely more a consultative environment. But I think that when we get to a solution, we've built more support for something that makes it more likely to succeed and carry on for the long term. There's benefits of being able to make decisions more quickly. There's also benefits in having this consultation model. That consultation is the part to make them last, that provides a lot more success. So I would encourage people to engage the consultation, think of it as an important element, and that in my own experience, having worked in local government, 15 years, that there's a lot of advantage to the consultative side, and in the end, you'll end up moving faster.
So Ron, what do you see as one of the best strategies for recognizing and dealing with resistance to change?
In the organization, somebody talked about when you have change, you have a third of the people who are for the change, a third who are indifferent, they'll move to the change if you want, or they'll stay where they want. And then you have the third that are mainly the resistors. This is sort of my paradigm. I believe that the employees want the change because they're the ones who have the best ideas because they do the job and they've been doing it for a long time. While the leaders are important and I want to have their support, I want to make sure I'm communicating to everyone and directly because I want to make sure that I'm answered, listened to, hear their concerns and providing answers to their concerns. So I think that's an important part is to engage the actual frontline people as supporters of the change. The second part that I think is important for every person, and I use this with all different projects, is that you have to have short-term wins. I always say 90-day project. I pick 90 days because one of the biggest reasons I think that change efforts fail is that they take too long. And when they take too long, the resistance can actually prevail because as they continue to delay, other things, priorities come up. Maybe there's more change efforts that get started, but this one never finishes. And if that never finishes, many times that's how resistors are successful in resisting a change is that it just never gets implemented. But if you can carve out a short-term win out of this, make it really small, and then you're done, then you can then do the next one and the next one. And as you have successes, people are starting to see the changes, and they start to say, great, I'm glad I got the better service. And this is how you get your momentum to make the change. And then after a period of time, people know that you can accomplish this. A thing to be careful of as a leader, it's hard to keep excited about a project that's going to take a year mm-hmm. without any delivery. Plus, other projects come up that then detract from your time. But if you have 90 days, you can stay on the project and ensure that it gets done. And then you start developing others who can make those types of changes. So it's like a snowball kind of effect in the uh-huh. organization. But I have a difference of approach than others. Some people will say, when I come into an organization, I observe the organization for like the first year, and I don't make any change. My own thoughts with that are, though, if you sit there for a long time with no change, then the organization doesn't feel sort of this momentum going forward. When you accomplish this, a sense of pride occurs. I think that's one of the keys, is you have to be delivering these short-term wins.
You've talked a lot about making sure that you have changes resourced. Mm-hmm. How do you know in advance what the necessary resources are going to be?
This is a really important part of the project. And I look at a change management effort as a project. You have to look at how much time, mm-hmm. how much money, and how much resources that a project will cost. And I think that this is an important part, is when you develop this project, you sort of come up with your idea, you run it by people, or somebody brings you an idea, and then you sort of vet it around the campus. And because you're trying to test, like, can this project really be done for this much money? Maybe you think it's going to be $50,000 and maybe it's going to be $1 million. So it could be way more expensive than we can possibly afford. And I make up a timeline, 90 days. But then we research this and there's no way it's going to be 6 months. So it's important to have this upfront process before you begin. Otherwise, you won't get there. And the challenge is that if you have a project and you don't succeed, then instead of having a lot of pride over people making a project, you could have a lot of frustrated people who were disappointed they worked so hard and didn't meet their timeline. So it's important to spend time up front in this preparation. And as you get forward with these timelines, I think one of the weaknesses I've seen leaders make is they arbitrarily make up a timeline and then try to hold people to that, but the timeline may not have been possible. So it has to have this discussion to lay out those three different areas so that you as a leader have to look for the resources, you have to provide the funding, and you have to make sure that they have the appropriate time to get this done so that when you get ready to move, you improve your likelihood of success. But remember, I think that another, I think, weakness that people have when they have change management efforts is look at your staff. Your staff are busy already. And to come up with another idea and to give it to them is almost a recipe for disaster. You have to carve out somewhere in your organization where you put people either on special assignment or you're looking at how to carve out resources so that you can have people dedicated to try to move this project kind of forward. It mm-hmm. takes more resources to have some benefit. You have this initial increase in resources, then later you can see some of the benefits. As a leader in wanting to bring about change, you have to provide a framework in which there's necessary resources mm-hmm. and there's the time and the money to make these changes. And I think that it takes the leader to be able to provide that support, is that, yes, we're going to make the change. We're going to invest in these changes, and we're going to help people succeed so they get done. So I don't think it can be done by this office or myself alone, and it can't be done by them alone either.
So you talked about a lot of changes that were sort of within your purview and mm-hmm. that either bubbled up from others in the organization or that you saw were necessary.
Right.
But we operate in a system, and you know, we're going through a number of different changes that are sort of mandated from outside. Mm-hmm. And we don't always have the opportunity to say, well, we're going to break that into these pieces or to try to make it more attainable in a 90-day window or whatever. And so I wonder if you'd have advice on how, when we're within a system and have it change kind of imposed like that,
right.
we can still make it a success.
I think that the principles are still similar. And I'll use the UC Path project as an example. But it's a project that was given to us. And we see the benefits. There'll be benefits for this project coming forward, but it's going to be a difficult transition. I think it's important as a leader to have a positive attitude. Hopefully I've expressed a positive attitude about bringing this thing forward. But it goes to the same kinds of things. As we go forward, how much time do we need? How many resources do we need? And how much money do we need? And with those, I think that I've been an advocate for, first of all, we were supposed to convert in March of last year. I was an outspoken person saying this campus is not ready and others are not ready to go in March. Hopefully my credibility with the Office of the President in mentioning this was helpful in delaying that start time to a time that I thought we'd be more successful, which is in this period of time. And also the resources that people need, and communication that we need for the campus as to why we're doing this. We have newsletters that are going out. We have road shows that are out there, all sorts of different ways so that we can encourage people to move forward in this project.
Ron, what is a reliable mechanism for handling unexpected circumstances that arise during a change process?
I like to make sure that we're always checking in on our projects. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the important parts of a change leader's role, is that they have to set the vision, have the time, money, and resources for the project ready to go. But it's important that they be the face of the project as well. Like, that means paying attention, making things that people have the resources. And what happens when things change? Now, then there has to be a topic and discussion about what it is that we can do. Maybe we can change the scope of the project a bit so that we can still make this. Maybe it requires another resource. I'll have somebody reassigned to that. But as a leader, you have to be, in my own opinion, hands-on in the fact that you have to be a visible force and part of this change effort. It will not happen on its own. And the most frustrating part that I see when I talk to people about failed change efforts is that they sort of get lost in the myriad of work that's being done, and the project set off with excitement. Nobody had a second meeting or a third meeting, and whatever happened to that project. And then people then begin to, either they're frustrated, or two, if they're resistant to the project, great, that sort of went in the way that they wanted it to go. So I think that you have to be involved, especially at the very beginning. Because I think at the beginning, if you're trying to change a culture of an organization, you're looking for people who are change agents, you're trying to develop them over time, they'll start taking on this role themselves. To have a proposed change management effort, so maybe when you tried to change the project, maybe the technology wasn't available that you now have available. So I don't think that there's any harm in doing that. And I think it's always good that you're checking in on the process. But a signal is if you're proposing a change and you start hearing a lot of feedback on campus that maybe this is not the right approach, you should listen to that. My advice to people is that was sort of the stuff that you missed at the beginning. And now you're sort of hearing it over here, and it's an important step because it's very difficult once the campus or an organization doesn't like the idea to convince them that they're going to like it because they weren't involved in the process at the very beginning. And now you're sort of explaining to them all the reasons why it's good for them when maybe they don't think it is. And so it's detrimental to have a terminated project. If it's for the reason that the project is not vetted, that can be a problem. Problem to our own, your confidence, to your credibility to the campus. But if it's something that happens that the technology changed or maybe you saw something, you should not be afraid to end a project because that takes courage as a leader and the worst thing you want to do. If you see this project is not going to be successful, whether it wasn't vetted properly or not, or the technology changed or whatever, you have to step up and make the big decision and kill the project because nothing good can keep moving forward with this kind of project. And by doing that, at least you were decisive. You're not wasting any more money or people's resources, and people respect that as well.
So what are the important characteristics senior leaders should show when introducing and managing change initiatives within an organization?
They have to show open communication. They have to be willing to lead this effort of talking about why the change needs to be made. They have to care about their staff. They have to be concerned about how these changes impact their staff. They have to have courage to make changes. Some of these things are going to be easy to get through, some difficult. Not all of them will be well received, but these positions are not always popular, but the decisions that have to be made. So you have to be willing to have courage, and you have to have resilience. Why resilience? Because these things can be very hard to get through. And if you really believe in them, and if you believe that this is best for the customer, and you believe it's the best use, you have to stick with it. And your organization may not always be in the same line with you, but you have to keep with it. Keep talking to people as to why it's important. Keep trying to bring it through. And I think if you have a one-off, you want to have a change effort, and it doesn't work, and you stop, you're not going to be a change leader. You'll have some failures too. And you have to be able to like get up the next day and say, well, that's okay. I have another idea. And why are change leaders so important? This is why, because it's the only way that I know that we'll continue to be relevant. There's so much oversight of us is how effective are they? How are they using the money that we're giving them? We don't have all that much money. And people look at us from the outside who are competing for dollars. And the fact that people may be comfortable with the position and doing what they're doing, that's no longer what it's about. We're in an environment where we're all connected and changes happen rapidly, and being part of these organizations requires change. And that requires leaders to move us from one part of the organization and keep us relevant in that organization and support our faculty and support our staff and support the organization. So I've enjoyed being what I consider a change leader, and I encourage others to do it. It's exciting, and I think it's a passion of mine.
Thank you so much for being with us.
And all right.
Yeah, we really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. It's a topic I really sort of, I think I pretty much spent my whole career doing this, so I really enjoy it.
Well, that came through loud and clear.
Okay.
The music in this podcast is entitled The Fifth Life by Circus Marcus.